Man on a Shadowy Planet. He also produced their third and final album, Sport Fishing and Accessories. And then the first one was produced by, I believe, a Canadian producer that was also an actor. The name is slipping my mind. But anyways, let's mention what we heard before that.
Oh, yes, we should probably do that. We heard, now, Dave was a little bit upset about this, because I know normally we play nothing but instrumental, but there have been a few years of deviations where we've played the occasional vocal track, and we did hear with The Forbidden Dimension. We heard something from their 1993 album Sin Gallery with the song Haunted. This was kind of a horror-themed surf punk band.
Yes.
So kind of imagine Bauhaus tanned and on surfboards. Maybe that's the best way to describe them.
Yeah, I guess. And then we started off the set with Huevos Rancheros from Ensville. And we heard a song from their 1993 release. We originally said it was 91.
You said 93.
I said 91.
You said 91. Well, okay, well, I'm glad you could admit that. Yeah, so you did say it. But we heard Wild and Wendy, one of my favorite songs from that record, and a classic in its own right. A lot of great classic surf rock coming out of Canada. But of course, surf isn't just the language of Canadians or North Americans. It's international. Throughout the years, we've played surf music coming from all across the world. We've played African surf. We've played New Zealand surf. We've played South American surf. And in this case, we're going to be playing some Japanese surf music.
Which there is quite a lot of, if you know where to look. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we're going to start off the next set with a pair of tracks from the Routes. I always say Roots, and I apologize. The Routes, we're going to start off with Like a Knife, which is a track from their latest album, Get Past Go. Then we're going to hear a Kraftwerk cover of The Robots from 2021's The Twang Machine. Really great. And then we're going to hear parts of an interview with Chris Jack of The Routes, split up into two segments. They're about 10 minutes each in between some tracks. So let's get to it. We're going to have a longer set of music and the interview here on Revolution Surf. And yeah, just let everyone know, that's where we're going next. We're starting off with a song called Like a Knife here on CJAM 99.1 FM. So my first question is just how and when did the routes form?
I came to Japan in the year 2000, and I was here for a couple of years, and I was really bored because I didn't speak Japanese and I didn't have any friends. So eventually I made some friends, and someone introduced me to a drummer, and we made like a punk group, a garage punk group, and it was called The Facials. And that went on for like a year and a half or so, and then we kind of like changed the music a bit, started playing guitar a bit more, and we decided to change names to Roots, and that's it really.
Cool. And then the first album as the Roots, it was
Left My Mind.
Yes. Okay, so I just wanted to ask you about that album. That was the first one you did. What do you remember maybe about making that record?
It's really hard to explain, but it took us ages to make that record because I was just recording stuff, then recording it again and again and again. And it was just complete trial and error. And it just went on for about a year, recording the same songs, playing with them, and trying to make it better all the time. And eventually we kind of found something. We hit on a sound that we liked. It was like, oh, we actually sound all right like this. But we actually found out how to make ourselves sound half decent, because it was sounding pretty rough at first. And then we put it on. That was in the days of MySpace, all them years ago. And we put it on MySpace. We made lots of friends, and some people were interested, and then it got put out. But it was a good time, because the drummer was like, he spoke English, and he was like my first close Japanese friend. Mm-hmm. And he was a bit older than me. He kind of kept me calm, kind of thing, stopped me from going a bit mad, you know, bothering people and getting angry and stuff. So he's pretty good. He's pretty in control of me. He's pretty good. So it's good memories.
And then recently you've been putting out a lot of music. I wanted to ask you about some of your recent albums that just came out. So Leadline Clouds and Get Past Go, were these recorded at the same time? Or
these were recorded last year. So we just, because of since COVID, we've just been constantly recording, and we don't record specifically with the intent to release stuff. We record for ourselves. It's like a hobby, basically, you know. We record, we just see what we can do and just play around with stuff, and then we kind of like just put it out there to a few labels, say, hey, we just recorded that, or people ask us, do you have anything that you can release? And people ask us in advance as well. And that was just last year, we just recorded them. I mean, Leadline Clouds was written and recorded over the period of about 2-3 months, and Get Past Go as well, 2-3 months on that. So yeah, it's just a, you know, a good COVID time killer.
And when you were approaching Leadline Clouds, how do you feel maybe it differs from a songwriting approach as opposed to Mesmerized?
For Leadline Clouds, we kept everything really simple. I mean, the basis of the songs is like basically open chords all the way, or bar chords. I mean, it's so simple. So for that album, we kept it really simple. I mean, there's lots of organ. I think the organ is a big part of that album. Mm-hmm. Whereas there wasn't much organ. I can't remember if we played organ on Mesmerized. But we tried to change the sound of the mix as well. It's a much bigger sound than we usually use. It's in stereo, which is like we use mono a lot. So yeah, it was a completely different approach. And I think at the time I wanted to do something different. So I wanted to do something a little bit more punky, but not so obviously, but like stuff like The Stranglers or The Fall, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we were looking at that kind of thing.
When you come up with songs, is it different all the time? Like, how would you, like, because you also do surf songs. Like, how do you decide?
The surf songs and instrumentals, I mean, because we're always doing something, we kind of do lots of different things, and we go from one thing to the other, because if we do the same thing too long, we just get stuck, or you just, you know, you get stuck in a rut, or you get writer's block. And that's the beauty of doing lots of different things. You don't get blocked because you're just moving around. And you know, sometimes I don't intend to write songs. I can just be taking a shower and a melody will come in my head. I'm like, oh, that'd be good. I'll just grab my phone and sing it into my phone, or I'll be at work. Sometimes I'll sit down and just play some chords and, you know, play guitar every day, and sometimes something comes out, sometimes nothing comes out. But you can't force a song, you know. You just have to wait for something to come. You might be playing and it's like, oh, that's nice, I'll use that. Yes, it's not like a very hard forced process as such. It's something you have to wait for, really.
And these last couple records you've been putting out, were they done like in a studio, or did you have to do them differently?
No, we do them at home. Everything we've done has always been recorded at home. I don't like the studio. We had a really bad experience when we recorded the second album, Alligator. We tried to record it at a local studio, and the guy in the studio, he just wasn't into what we're doing at all. He's totally in the wrong job. He's like, he didn't even know, like, about garage or stuff. He was like, oh, you've got too much reverb on your guitar. And we were recording, and we kept making mistakes, and he's sitting there, his arms folded. He's, like, tutting, literally tutting, sighing, and, like, we're paying this guy money, and he's just, like, really agitated, and you don't want to record us. You don't want to be there. And it's, you know, it's totally, it kills your motivation, and that was the end of the studio for me. We didn't even finish that. We just quit the studio and recorded ourselves halfway through. It's so bad. But yeah, we just recorded everything at home. So the drums are recorded in England by the drummer in his front room. And I record the guitars and everything else here in this room here, actually.
Oh, and do you have to play along to like a metronome or something? Or do you have like a drum machine that you have to keep the beat?
I record to a metronome, and then I send the metronome and the guitar and the bass or whatever, I send it to the drummer, and then he plays the drums at home. He lives on he has like an old, what used to be a farmhouse. So he has no neighbors and he's single, and he can play drums 24 hours. He doesn't bother anyone. So yeah, it's really good. But the ideal drummer.
he can be loud, yeah.
Yeah, he can be really loud, yeah.
You put out a surf instrumental tribute to Kraftwerk last year. I want to ask you how you kind of came up with that. It's a really interesting idea, and also it works. You wouldn't think Kraftwerk and surf, right? But
yeah, it's a weird combination. But that, my musical taste, I mean, I'm not one of these like people just, oh, I only listen to garage or I only listen to surf. I mean, I listen to everything. So I listen to a lot of German music, kraut rock, and jazz. I listen to Indian stuff, all sorts of music. And the drummer too, he's mostly into like a European jazz music, 60s European jazz. He's really, I don't know, he likes like an avant-garde, and I don't know. But he's also, one mutual thing we're really both into is Kraftwerk. And he was saying, I'd really like to do jazz covers of Kraftwerk. I'm like, well, let's do a surf version. He's like, yeah, let's do that. And we just, you know, started doing it. It was just for our own amusement. We really enjoyed doing it. It was really funny seeing how the songs could be made into surf songs. It's really satisfying, isn't it, as well? Because, you know, if you're really into something like that. We didn't think it would be as well received as it was, so that was a nice thing.
Yeah, it was really cool. And there was one, you had three albums out. There was another instrumental album, Shake 5, as well.
Yeah, yeah, that was last year, yeah.
Last year.
Oh, the year before last, though, yeah.
Mixing it up.
It's okay, it's very close. It's how I'm still, so I'm not used to it being 2023.
When you're coming up with an album, or like even the instrumental albums, do you have an idea of how many songs you want to do? Or are you just kind of making stuff and then you're putting it together? Because you said you're always recording.
I normally just go for 10 or 12. I don't know why it's always that number. It's always 10 or 12 songs. You know, I haven't got the greatest attention span ever. So, like, if I'm listening to a record and it's too long, I find it really hard to listen to something that's really long. So, you know, I get bored really quickly. So it's the same with my own music, playing music and stuff. I get bored really quickly. And I don't want to make an album that I'm going to get bored of really quick.
Yeah. Okay.
So short.
Cool.
But 30 minutes is good for me. 30 minutes albums are good.
And the artwork for your last two albums, maybe you could talk a bit about that. The Get Past Go artwork is pretty striking. And also for Leadline Clouds, pretty psychedelic.
Get Past Go is the artist Joseph Harmon. He's in America. And I found him on Instagram. I just love his work. It's really bizarre. It's really like the characters. It reminds me of when I was a kid, when you used to look at He-Man books. I don't know if you know He-Man, but
yeah,
stuff like that. The characters are like, really, what the hell is this guy doing holding two pineapples, you know? And yeah, I don't know, just really, I really like his artwork, and I reached out to him. He was really more than willing to do the artwork, so that's good. And Leadline Clouds is a friend of ours in Portugal called Bunny. And last time we went to Portugal, she was our babysitter. So she looked after us and showed us around. And, I really like her artwork too, so.
When was the last time you played a live show?
That would have been, hold on, when was it? 2020, hold on, what's that? 2020. 2000, we haven't played live for 3 years, but we're kind of, you know, it's we're ready if we ever get the call.
Yeah. So are you planning in the future to do more live shows? Or
if we get called out to tour or to play overseas, we'll play. I'm trying to persuade the drummer to come to Japan, just to even play like just on a holiday. So even if we can just play one or two shows. So that might happen. We'll see. We might go to Germany next year for a festival, but there's nothing definite yet. I mean, I have a very demanding day job as well, so it's kind of very hard to get time off, you know?
We'll be right back.
So I wanted to ask a bit about just surf music, and how did you get into surf music, and what are some of maybe your early influences of surf music?
Well, my first memory of surf music was when I was about 13, 14 years old. I bought a really crappy English Beach Boys compilation, and it had their cover version. I think they had a cover of Missoula on it. I think they covered it, and it wasn't a very good cover, but it was like my first exposure to surf guitar, so I was like, wow. And then after that, I got into Dick Dale, Link Wray as well. Link Wray was a big influence because I know it's not surf, but we used to cover Link Wray very early in the Roots. We used to play quite a few of his songs in the set. After that, it's kind of like, you know, led on to stuff like Astronauts, Safaris, Ventures. And then when I came here, I discovered Teruichi Takeshi.
Oh, yeah. Amazing.
Amazing, yeah. So I got to meet him.
Oh, really? Cool. Maybe you could talk about that.
Years ago, he came to play in the city next to my city. I live in the middle of nowhere. Okay. Like, I don't know. I know you have a lot of places like that in Canada, but this is really like a bowl, literally a bowl in the mountains in the middle of nowhere. And we're in between like two big, like what you, I don't know, prefecture states. So we're like on the borderline. So we're kind of quite far out from the main cities, mm-hmm. although we are a city. And so he played in one of the other countryside cities, and I knew someone, or the drummer knew someone who worked at the venue. But he got us tickets and he said, I can get to meet him. We're like, all right. And so we turned up. Like, you hear lots of things, you know, you hear things about famous people, about what they're like and that. And Teruichi Takeshi doesn't have the best reputation. He didn't have, I should say in passing, he didn't have a very good reputation for, like, having been patient with his fans and stuff, you know. So it was, I didn't have great expectations, and the guy took us to the room, and he came out of his room, and he was wearing really funny clothes, really funky, like a big Hawaii shirt, lots of gold and white trousers and big white sneakers, and he came out, and he was like pretty much like, who are these people, you know? And then he kind of like looked at me, and he's like, he realized I was a foreigner, which is like, he's like, oh, hello, who are you? He's like, he wanted to speak English, because I guess he must have been overseas a lot in his time. You know, I know he went to Germany, I think, and yeah, he's very interested, and he was really happy to have like a non-Japanese person turn up at his concert in the middle of nowhere. I think he was kind of surprised. Yeah, he had quite a bit of time for me, so he talked a bit, asked him a bit about his guitars, and after the show, we were in the foyer, and he leaned over the balcony. Yeah. And he spotted me. He said, hey, how was it? How was the show? And I said, no, it's great, thank you. Yeah, it's really, really cool. So I got special service, you know, for being white and pasty and English. And, so yeah, it's good memory. But yeah, he was really, really good, considering he was in his 70s at the time, and he could play so good.
Yeah, he kept playing for a long time. He kept doing shows.
Kept playing until like just before, I think about a year before he passed away.
So. Yeah, that's amazing. For his guitars, does he have a specific kind that he told you he plays, or?
Oh, he always used Mosrite or Yamaha, but mostly Mosrite. He had the same guitar that he used most of his career, the Black Mosrite. Like, the one thing I was intrigued about is on a lot of the old record covers is there's this guitar that's a really strange shape. And it's a mystery guitar. I've got a lot of his albums. I've got excess copies of Rush Orman. Cool. That's the what's that, 4-channel stereo for people with 4 speakers, you know? Oh, here. So yeah, I don't think you can see that, but there's a white, yes. There's a white guitar he's holding, very strange shape.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I asked him what that was, because I was really interested in it. I was just like, that's a really strange looking guitar.
It is.
Not a regular guitar you see all the time. And apparently it was, he had a sponsorship with the Japanese company called Elk. And in the day he used to use the whole backline of the band was this big wall of Elk amplifiers. And he used to get a lot of Elk guitars. I don't think he actually used the guitars live much. I think he used them as props for covers and stuff. But he usually, he just stuck to his glass.